either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Well, we've got monsters of different sorts to talk about this weekend in the movie offerings, and we'll dig in. Welcome. This is the Screening Room Podcast, and she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And we are from madwolf.com. Let's start with the big one opening nationwide. A journey across a dystopian future America follows a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. It's Civil War.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
Every instinct in me says this is death.
Blood it.
Every time I survived the war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you?
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go, 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 go!
God bless America.
This is the latest from writer-director Alex Garland. His directing, he did Ex Machina and Annihilation. Mm-hmm. Love that. But before that, he was the writer for both...
28 Days Later.
28 Days Later.
Never Let Me Go.
And Never Let Me Go. Yes, talented filmmaker. And we probably should point out, since one of the guys on the radio morning show I called this morning thought this was a movie about the 1865 Civil War. No.
Nope.
No, this would be one in the near future America. And this is one that is just, it's so good and it's so worthwhile, but man.
Harrowing.
You need to decompress after this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were lucky. We fired up some Jimmy Buffett in the car driving home just to lighten the mood because, man, this thing puts you through it. But it's on purpose, and it's for a very good reason. Obviously, Civil War, that's where it just drops you into. And I think they asked us this on TV this morning about, is there any, like, build-up as to how or why? No.
No,
you just dropped in because Garland is probably figuring we're living – through such a divided country right now, we can probably guess how we got there.
You know, one of the other things I thought was really smart was that it does not take political sides at all.
Right.
And I think, you know, makes some interesting choices where the political divide isn't super clear, because that is not the point. As you said on TV today, the point is, let's not do this. We are supposed to be above this.
Yeah, that's one of the things. I think the line is in the trailer as well that Kirsten Dunst says, because the movie centers around this group of four journalists. Kirsten Dunst is a longtime war photographer, photojournalist, and it's basically she and her partner Joel, played by Wagner Moura. They're basically going themselves. They're going, just the two of them. They want to travel from New York City to D.C. to try to get this interview with the president, played by Nick Offerman, by the way. And then they take on two others. There's a longtime reporter, played by the great Stephen McKinley Henderson. He comes along, and then they sort of reluctantly, well, at least she does, Kirsten Dunst reluctantly, takes along this newbie who wants to be a photojournalist, played by Callie Spawny, who was just in Priscilla and some other things. So you've got four of them, and they're going in this press-marked vehicle. And it becomes the first
road trip.
The first two-thirds of this movie are a road trip. Now, we've mentioned several times that so many times in movies, the road trip narrative can just be a lazy way to connect.
String together incidents.
But this, man, it really, the narrative device works because they're traveling through a divided America and these different stops that either they make or they're forced to make. Man, they are tense because they already know that in some parts of the country, as they're traveling, just being press will make it dangerous to them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've seen that. We see where people in the country today are claiming that, you know, journalists are the enemy of the people and all that crap. So all this seems very real.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's frighteningly real, and that's what he's trying to
right.
do.
And
that's
of course,
why
what the road trip leads you to, right, is as you're saying, the first 2/3 of the film is a road trip picture, and then the final act is a war movie. It's a full on war movie, and it's brilliantly shot, and it's so unnerving, and it's just like I said earlier, just harrowing.
Yeah, and some of the stops, we don't want to give away too much, but one of these has been put in the trailer. It's the one that features
Jesse
Plemons. And man, he is so scary.
Yeah,
I mean, this sequence where they are confront him and at least, you know, his group there that has made a bunker and is keeping them from going farther. Let's put it that way. And man, that is so tense and just scary. And it's one of the stops along the way that introduces you to these different factions of people. And you're right, it never tips its hand as to what kind of politics they favor. You can get an idea, and also there are a couple of lines that the president, Nick Offerman, says early on that can give you a little bit of an idea about what kind of policies he was enforcing, but that's really about it, because one of the things it does, it talks about, the president talks about the he calls them the Western forces, who are the rebels, I guess, in this case, and they're led by Texas and California,
You don't expect to be paired.
Right,
that's interesting.
We know those states as a quote unquote red state and blue state. So right there, he's not tipping his hand about who is rebelling here, because it's not about the movie doesn't become about ideology as much as it does the fact that we're supposed to be above this. This is an America that always looked at other countries going through things like this, and we're above that. You know, we're supposed to be indivisible, right? That's what we've always said. And the warning that the line that Kirsten Dunst's character says that I think has made it into the trailer about, every time I've been in a war zone, I thought I was sending back a warning to us, don't do this. And that's really the underlying, I think, the underlying theme of this movie. Look at this.
Yeah.
Look at how it just turns your stomach.
Yeah.
Don't do this, because anybody that's living here in America right now, or just even outside and looking at what we're going through, if you don't think that this could have, that we're down a road where this could happen, I mean, come on.
Right.
We are so divided right now. And I think that is what this movie is saying, that we can still be divided, but when it gets to the point where we look at the other side of our argument as inhuman and just kill them, that's where you just have to stop and take a long, hard look at everything. We can still disagree about things, but when you just dehumanize people because they don't agree with you, next thing you know, you're killing them in a civil war.
I think it's important to point out that this isn't one of those movies that's like a message film and you're not going to enjoy. This is everything a movie needs to be. It is cinematic. It's edge of your seat.
Oh,
it's incredibly well constructed. The performances are amazing. It's breathtaking in the way it's shot. It's so surprising in the different things that happen. You know, a lot of times when there is like a message movie, the movie itself is not very good as movies go. That's not the case here. It's a really cinematically well put together experience.
Yeah, especially when it gets to the war zone.
Yeah.
Man, it will just batter your senses. It's incredibly well staged. The action is incredible and really tense and breathtaking, and then the final battle,
I'm telling you,
it really is. It'll take something out of you.
It is.
It's an experience.
Yeah.
It really is, and it is so worth seeing, though, but just be ready, because it is, it's brutal.
Yeah.
And you see some sights, and again, some of these are in the trailer with things like the Lincoln Memorial being blown up. I mean, you just cannot believe what you're seeing, and it's so well done, and it feels so authentic and believable. That's just an incredible, incredible experience, an incredible vision that is pulled off with really some really great craftsmanship. And you're right, some great performances too.
Yeah.
I mean, Kirsten Dunst has never been better.
No, she has.
Just it's just really, really solid. And And the word that we keep coming back to is harrowing, and that's what it is. But it's a really worthwhile and necessary experience, and definitely one of the best films of the year so far. And that is Alex Garland's Civil War in theaters now. Well, let's go to a horror thriller next. After raising an unnervingly talented spider in secret, 12-year-old Charlotte must face the facts about her pet and fight for her family's survival when the once charming creature rapidly transforms into a giant flesh-eating monster. It's called Sting.
What the?
Could a spider grow in a couple of hours?
The stars in the sky.
Problem with doors?
Now we have to deal with this together.
Writer-director Kaya Roach-Turner made a movie a few years back called Wormwood, Road of the Dead, and it was super fun. It was a Mad Max zombie film. And I didn't love the sequel, actually, but we really enjoyed the original. And I would not necessarily have thought that this movie, though, was in him. Not that, I mean, I think Wormwood would show that he's a very solid filmmaker, horror filmmaker in particular, but Sting is so polar opposite in terms of the genre. It's all inside this building. And it's got sort of a Joe Dante vibe about it, right? The building itself is supposed to be like this sort of rundown Bronx apartment building where the little girl's actually great aunt owns it, and there's cockroaches, but actually once you're in it, it's an incredibly cool looking building. And even though everybody's like, they're complaining about their apartment, I'm thinking to myself, I would love to live in this apartment. The colors are great, the furniture's cool, you know what I mean? The opening sequence with the credits and the things like that gives you the entire backstory in the most absolutely ingenious way. And it also has you climbing around in the ducts and, you know what I mean? And in the sort of crawl spaces in this apartment. So it gives you a sense of the building, of the space that you're going to inhabit, of the characters who live in the apartment building. And it also makes you feel like a little spider that's crawling around. I mean, this movie is so well put together and it is so much fun. And sort of like, Joe Dante, like Gremlins or The Burbs or something, it's a much more dark and subversive film than you may expect right at the offset. However, this one is R. They're not pretending that this is they're not packaging this as a family film. This is an R-rated movie. A lot of people die. They die in a gory, gory way. And it's just a trigger warning. Pets die. The pets are going to die. So don't, if that's going to be a problem for you, then don't go. And but it's such a cleverly, visually a crafted film. And a lot of the effects are not computer generated. There's a lot of natural.
Practical.
Sorry. There's a lot of practical effects in this film, which just makes it that much better.
Oh, so, yeah. Love it.
I loved it. I had a ton of fun with this movie.
Be ready if you have anything, like you said, any fear of spiders. This is not going to be happy. It's not going to be happy time.
No, not at all. No. But if you like horror movies and you're afraid of spiders, I think that this is a good choice for you.
Yeah, all in. And that's in theaters now, and it's called Sting. Well, let's have some more monsters for an action horror thriller. A father and his twin teenage sons fight to survive in a remote farmhouse at the end of the world. It's called Arcadian.
I don't want to hide from them anymore. What do we do?
Are we not men?
Trapped us in.
They're curling up from underneath us.
They'll break in any second. You need to trust me.
Now, Nicolas Cage is the father, and this is a dialed down, this is a restrained, understated Nicolas Cage, but he's very good, and he's perfect for this role. But he plays Paul, who's got these twin 15-year-old sons, and it's another dystopian future. We get an early prologue, or the opening minutes of the movie, when the kids, the two boys, were just babies, when this whole whatever it is was starting. So the details are a little sketchy. A couple of the characters give us some dialogue that gives us maybe a little bit of insight as to what happened, but we're not quite sure. But it really doesn't hamper the fact that we are get brought into this family's quest for survival, and really another family down the road a little bit. They're both in these isolated farmhouses, and by day, they just go about their business of sustenance and survival because they got to be indoors by nightfall, because when the night comes, so do the monsters, so do the creatures, and they want in badly. But if you can make it through the night, then you're good for the rest of the day. And the two sons, Nicolas Cage's two sons, Joseph, Jaden Martell, who's always
good. I love him.
Yeah.
I love him in everything.
Since he was a little kid in
St. Vincent.
Yeah, with Bill
Murray.
He's
also in Midnight Special.
Yeah,
and, oh,
yeah.
I
he's
love
good.
Him.
And then his brother Thomas is Maxwell Jenkins. Now, Thomas is he's more impulsive, and he's a little romantic. He's got a thing with the farmhouse down the road. They have a teenage daughter, so he's finding more days, more times where he can go down and help out so he can see that teenage daughter, and then that gets him staying out later and later, closer to dark, and that's not going to be good. And then Jaden Martell, Joseph, he's the introspective, quiet thinker, and what he's been doing, he's been studying the way that these monsters come and attack every night, and he thinks he sees a pattern, and he thinks that what they're doing is testing and planning, and he is absolutely right. So things will escalate, and you know, the themes are not new. As the movie goes along, it sort of leans YA. It really does, because the teens get more involved, and the story becomes more about them having to take on adult responsibilities and learn about the things that really matter in life, things that they cherish and loss and sacrifice. So it's a bit of a YA leaning horror thriller, with Cage delivering the sort of understated grace about it, and he's very good, and he's one of those parts that reminds you he's not always unhinged
right.
Cage.
Right.
You know? And he can be very, very good, and he's perfect in this part, because the teenage actors are also very good, including Sadie Soverall, who plays the girl down the road, Charlotte. But anyway, Jaden Martell, he's right about the monsters planning, so they find a way to get even more dangerous. And when they do, there's an interesting creature design. Now, a lot of this is CGI, but it's pretty effective. And the monsters might remind you of a monster or two in a movie that you've seen, but they do have one very unique trait about them, which is pretty scary when they pull it out. And it'll get your attention big time. Now, this one is rated R. I mean, this is bloody. This is definitely bloody. So be aware of that. But it's effective. I mean, they're not reinventing anything. The director is Benjamin Brewer. The writer is Michael Nylon. And they're not reinventing anything here. But what they are doing, they're doing it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
With some thrills and some scares and some monsters and some good performances that make the YA type of themes land a little better than most. And those YA themes that are prevalent, they're not pandering.
Right.
Which is very welcome in a movie like this. So yeah, I think this is a nice little horror thriller that's out in theaters now, and it's called Arcadian. Let's stay in theaters for a mainly foreign language film, an adventure comedy fantasy. A group of archaeologists and the black market of historical artifacts are the backdrop for La Chimera.
This is Saint Malik.
Adesso ti facciamo vedere delle cose che nemmeno gli archeologi se le sognano.
This movie is beautiful, it's weird, it's poetical, it's funny, it's odd. There's an Englishman who is asleep on a train at the beginning of the movie, and the train is taking him back to this little villa in Tuscany, and You're not sure for a while what the deal is. And the movie never sits you down and explains it. I'll tell you that. But for whatever reason, he spends his time in Tuscany, where a much older civilization used to just bury their dead with a bunch of stuff to take with them. Now, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so he and
I think a lot of cultures did that at one point. Yeah,
but it's right under your feet there. And so he and some of the other just sort of, you know, low life goofballs in this villa, they dig around and they find this stuff and they sell it on the black market. And so Arthur, the Englishman played by Josh O'Connor, he somehow has the knack, the gift of finding it. It's kind of like when, you know, old time sort of water diviners where they walk around, you know, with like a stick sort of, and it's just like that. And he has this gift of finding these burial sites. And so that's kind of the main plot, is that he finds them, they dig them up, these goofballs, and they try to sell them. But then there's also, he dreams periodically of his girlfriend who is dead. And then he visits his girlfriend's mother, played by Isabella Rossellini, who, and the two of them talk about how he's still looking for the daughter that's dead. And they don't dwell on that either. They don't dig into it. But the sense that you get, because the film definitely has magical realism touches to it, absolutely, is that he's not necessarily looking for these items. He's maybe looking for a way to retrieve her from the land of the dead, right? In this very, and there's so much about the movie that is very poetic in that way. Isabella Rossellini is playing a woman who's probably in her 90s, right? So she's playing much older than she is. She does a great job. And there's just such a sense of, like, almost the whole population of this area made me think of locusts. They're all sort of feeding off of what is already there, and nobody seems to have a job. And it's just odd, but it's also really charming, like a very, very charming film. It's a very unusual, beautiful, lovely movie. And if you get a chance to catch it in theaters, I recommend it.
Yeah, this is co-writer and director Alice Rohrwacher, and it's out in theaters now, called La Chimera. Got a horror movie next in limited theaters. A young woman arrives in the Chicago suburbs and begins to suspect that something terrible has happened to her missing cousin, but soon realizes that her greatest fears don't even begin to scratch the surface. This is called Invader. Now, we bring this one up because it's basically touring around the country in some theaters, and we actually get it. As we tape this, we get this film tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in to the Gateway Film Center here in Columbus, Ohio, and we're so glad to have producer and co-star of the movie, Joe Swanberg.
That's right. He's bringing it out.
He is, and he was so nice to us with our movie Obstacle Corpse, showing it at his special theater in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can't wait for this. This is going to be good. And we got a chance to see it early. And here's another one where the term harrowing can come up.
Oh, my God,
because
yes.
Because this is one, this is only about 70 minutes long,
yep.
But it puts you through it.
It does. It's lean. It's mean. It dives right in. And, you know, it's a home invasion film. It's a home invasion thriller. And they can be harrowing to start with. But this really does it in a very different sort of way. And it's writer-director Mickey Keating. And it's funny because it doesn't seem like one of his films to me. My favorite of his films up to now is called Darling, which is sort of a descent into madness. It's very pretty. It's black and white. Whereas this is just it's all handheld, and there's a lot of death metal periodically. It's like an assault on you, the viewer, the whole time. And it works so well to get you constantly on edge with the main character, Anna, who she just took a bus in to Chicago to visit her cousin. They got in very late. She can't get her cousin on the phone. And the bus stop is deserted. And she has to call a cab. And when the cab gets there, so there's all of this right off the bat. All of these very disconcerting things happen even before she finally gets to the house. It's so well crafted in the way that it just ratchets up tension.
Yeah, really, it really puts you through it, a different kind of experience, like we talked about Civil War being an experience. Yeah, your gut is kind of clenched the whole time. It reminded me of a few other movies, funny games,
yes,
maybe
yeah.
in the way. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a little Silence of the Lambs in there. The Strangers a little bit,
yeah,
because
little bit.
It is a home invasion mm-hmm. movie. But it just, man, it just doesn't let up. It really doesn't.
And I think the last act is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's quick moving. I love it. It's not, I think, what you expect. I don't think it's where you think it's going.
And it's the way it's filmed as well. It's a little bit of a, it's very shaky cam,
mm-hmm.
you know, very
mm-hmm.
handheld, little cinema verite type of thing
yeah,
going on.
Yeah.
But it just, it really pulls you in and immerses you in this so that, you know, you're a little out of breath. You feel like you're
yeah.
running along and trying to catch up. And yeah, it's, even though it's only 70 minutes, you feel like you've been through something.
Yes.
Here.
Yep.
So if you get a chance to see it in your area, do so. And hopefully it'll get, you know, get a wider release, maybe hit streaming or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
This is one, if you like this type of horror thriller, man, this is one that will make you sweat.
Yeah.
and make you hold your breath. And well done all the way around. And it is called Invader. And we'll finally lighten the mood with one more this week, a comedy crime thriller. When Ray discovers that his wife is cheating on him, he decides he's going to kill himself. His plans suddenly change when a stranger mistakes him for a low-rent hitman in Leroy, Texas.
Do you know James Barlow?
No.
He was found run over and shot in the head.
Run over?
And shot in the head.
I'm taking the case.
You need a professional in this.
But I don't think I need any help.
Yes, you do.
Police would love to know what I know.
You're not even a real detective.
Who killed James Barlow? It's important that I find him.
Can I take my break now?
Yeah, Chad. That's fine. This guy's a maniac.
It's important to finish things once we start them.
Wait!
Get off me! Get
this guy knows something. I can see it in his eyes.
You can't just go around drowning people.
Well, that was one guy.
First of all, this cast. So it's John Magaro, Dylan Baker, Steve Zahn.
Right.
It's, you know, sort of a hillbilly noir kind of a caper movie, you know, that's got a little bit of maybe
Coen Brothers.
Yeah, a little Lebowski
it.
On mm-hmm. in it, you know. But it's much more lightweight than that, but it is constantly entertaining. And Steve Zahn steals this movie. Christy Robb wrote the review for us. She liked it very much. And she says his getup is like cowboy go to prom and that he's got like a Cocker Spaniel vibe the whole time. And that's exactly nails it on the head.
He's always just fun to watch.
He really is.
And John Magaro, in a different way, is always solid. And of
course, I love him.
Of course, Dylan Baker has been a veteran that guy for years.
Yeah, he's always great.
But yeah, Zahn always, whatever's going on, your eye is just drawn to him, especially when he gets the chance to be crazy and zany. He's so good with zany.
Yeah, I mean, I love it's a Cocker Spaniel vibe. He definitely has like a excitable dog kind of a vibe about him. So it's not, I mean, it's, you know, don't compare it to a Coen Brothers. That's unfair to almost anybody,
yeah.
But it is a fun time.
Yeah, and it's out in, actually, it's day and date. It's theaters and VOD.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of ways to check this one out. And check out Christy Robb's full review. You can find that at madwolf.com. But it is called Leroy, Texas. Okay, I think it's time to schlock and roll.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Time to check back into the lobby with Daniel Baldwin, a.k.a. the Schlocketeer, for more news and notes. What you got?
Got a lot of stuff that people can watch this weekend and early next week.
Okay.
First up, Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest is now available to stream on Max. Ethan Coen's Driveway Dolls is available to stream on Peacock. Matthew Vaughn's Argylle is available to stream on Apple TV Plus. Maybe of this bunch, that might be the one to save for later.
Disappointing, yes.
Laundry day. And then Bob Marley One Love is now available on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
And both Snack Shack and Kung Fu Panda 4 have hit VOD.
All right.
Snack Shack.
Snack
that
Shack.
Was a blast.
I laughed and laughed.
And speaking of laughing, Nightmares Film Festival alum and one of my favorite movies of the year so far, Hundreds of Beavers, is hitting VOD next week on the 15th.
Nuts. That movie is nuts.
It really is. And it's everywhere it goes. I mean, I can see that becoming just like a cult classic.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, people just fall in love with that thing.
Yeah.
And then speaking of going crazy places, one day later on April 16th is when Immaculate is hitting VOD.
Yeah.
And then Dune Part 2 hits VOD the exact same day. So there's a pairing for you.
There it is. Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Moving on, the spider-filled French horror film Infested is hitting Shudder on April 26th.
Yes, I saw that. Our review is coming soon, and it is creepy. That's the one to watch with Sting. That's a back-to-back that will have you like, you know.
Spiders everywhere.
And then the documentary Remembering Gene Wilder hits VOD on April 30th. And Neon has set a May 17th theatrical release for the indie comedy Babes, which they just picked up off the festival circuit. And Ron Howard's got a new documentary. It's Jim Henson, Idea Man, and that hits Disney Plus on May 31st. And then we've got a bit of shuffling around for the summer slate. Warner Brothers has pushed back the release of M. Night Shyamalan's Trapped by 1 week to August 9th. And Lionsgate delayed the release of their remake of The Crow from early June to August 23rd. Not exactly sure why, because August is actually just as packed as June is, but hey, I'm not in charge of decisions, so.
Well, you should be.
And then I've got two more for you. First up, Lionsgate has set a September 27th theatrical release for their horror film Never Let Go, which stars Halle Berry and is directed by Alexander Aja. That should be an interesting pairing.
Indeed.
And then, lastly, Disney and Searchlight Pictures have set a December 6th theatrical release for Marielle Heller's new film, which is a horror comedy starring Amy Adams and Scoot McNairy called Night Bitch.
Wow, Amy Adams.
Yes, I saw
that
something about
that. That is awesome.
For a minute, I thought it was a joke.
Right.
Because of the premise, but it's not.
Wow. I also love Scoot McNairy, but I mean, not in the same breath as Amy Adams, but still.
Yeah, I believe she's playing a woman who believes she's turning into a dog at night.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, I'll see how that plays out. All right, you can always catch up with Daniel for the latest news. Find him on the socials at The Schlocketeer. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Looking ahead to next week, got a couple of big releases in the theater, starting with the horror film Abigail.
And the new Guy Ritchie Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
One called Villains Incorporated. Did they do Funky Town? No?
No. Sasquatch Sunset.
Oh, The People's Joker.
Yeah.
That was a favorite of Nightmares Film Festival.
Yes, it was. Also Blood for Dust.
Okay, that's next week. But boy, a lot to talk about this week, especially Civil War. And then if you like the monsters, you've got the spiders and some other crazy monsters in Arcadian. And a lot going on. So what do you think? We always love to keep the conversation going. You can find us easily, Mad Wolf Columbus on Facebook, on Threads, and on Instagram. And, of course, the main website, all of our written reviews and our other horror movie only podcast, which we're getting ready to record another one tonight.
That's right.
So it'll be out soon. Called Fright Club. Find that all at madwolf.com. So many ways to keep in touch. We hope you will. Enjoy the movies. Until next week, she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast.
See ya.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Bye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.